sitting on the table.
Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Freedom.
Respect.
Justice.
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 Just this.
Just this.
Equality.
Equality.
Remedy.
And protection.
Fairness.
Fair time.
Privacy.
Right.
Will.
Peace.
Losers.
This is my mistake. Let me make it good. I raised the wall. And I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum.
Identity.
Family.
Home.
Conscience.
Expression.
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 Participation.
Democracy.
Welfare.
Work.
Work.
Leisure.
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 Health.
Education.
Progress.
Culture.
Human rights.
Charter Dana.
Fill in the mortar. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good day to our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a global collection of musicians. I'm Jim Hutchings with Brian Brocheza, and the social justice class, or a few of them, from Campus Regina Public. I'm going to turn it over to them right now to introduce themselves and their special guest.
Hi, my name is Alex. With me today is Claire and Ashley. We are students from social justice class of Campus Regina Public. Campus Regina Public is a program that provides high school students from across the division the opportunity to enroll in specialty 2-credit courses and dual university courses. Each course is industry and community supported and features approved training that may not be available in our home school. Campus Regina Public provides us with the opportunity to meet students from other schools that have the same interests. In these classes, we have access to more field trips and there are plenty of guest speakers. It provides us with hands-on training that prepares us for the future, and today we have come to talk to you about homelessness.
Homelessness in Regina is a very large problem. No one in Canada could be homeless with our resources, but looking at the statistics across the country, we realize homelessness is increasing dramatically. In 2009 alone, Regina had about 3,000 people staying in shelters. This is just an estimated number. This number is considerably higher since homeless rates have gone up and housing is harder to get. Not all homeless people have access to shelters. There's a limited amount of space, and some are denied access. Plenty of homeless people live in tents and backyards, in vehicles and bushes downtown, around town. They accept a place to stay from someone who can potentially be dangerous, just to avoid freezing in the street.
There are many different causes of homelessness. Most well known are low vacancy rates, loss of job, addictions, health problems, and mental health issues, domestic violence, and bad luck. Over the last 10 years, the cost of homes has risen 173%. The cost of the average amount of rent has increased by 9% since 2006. Between 2006 and 2010, the rent of an apartment increased to 43%. It should be also noted that Regina has the lowest vacancy rate in Canada at 0.7%.
There are three types of homelessness: absolute, concealed, and at risk.
The people classified under absolute homelessness are the people who sleep rough, use public or private shelters. People sleeping rough in public places make up the core population of the homeless. Those sleeping in shelters provided by welfare or other institutions are considered to be part of this population. Persons or households living under these circumstances will furthermore be identified as homeless.
Concealed homeless are people who are homeless but temporarily housed with friends or family. Without this privately offered housing opportunity, they would be living in the street or be sheltered by an institution of the welfare system. It also includes those facing the risk of losing their shelter either by eviction or lease expiry, with no other possibility of shelter in view. Prisoners are people living in other institutions facing their release and having no place to go are also considered part of this population. Concealed homeless can also live in overcrowded houses, often with several families in one-bedroom apartments.
There are many Canadians who are inadequately housed. While being inadequately housed is not the same as being homeless, it can lead to being at risk of homelessness. Most of the people who become homeless start off being inadequately housed before coming homeless. Many people have been living in substandard housing situations. Households with feeble and perhaps insecure income are likely to live in substandard housing units and might also experience homelessness because of economic difficulties.
Today, we have our special guest, Hirsch Greenberg, from the University of Regina, to help us answer some questions that we have about homelessness.
Good afternoon, Hirsch, and thank you for coming out today. Would you like to tell us a bit about yourself and what you do?
Well, I'm a professor at the university, University of Regina, in the Department of Justice Studies, and I'm also the practicum coordinator. I place students in the field to gain experience in working areas of criminal and social justice.
Okay, what does social justice mean to you, and do you think the issue of homelessness is a social injustice?
Well, social justice, I think, is about finding solutions to very complex social problems that involve things like crime and poverty and racism and sexism. Social justice is about developing respect and treating human beings with dignity. Homelessness, for sure, is an injustice, I think, in our country. According to the United Nations Charter, people should have a right to have a home in the same way they have a right to have food.
Who makes up the majority of the homeless population?
Mostly people who... It's complicated. It's not a single group of people. So you'd have people that may be having a mental illness that find it difficult to stay in a home on their own. You could have women and children who are leaving domestic violence situations. You've already mentioned some folks that are, after serving a term in jail, getting out, not having access or a place to stay, either because they don't have any money or because there's simply no place to stay. Young people, many who are discharged after foster care, don't necessarily have access to adequate housing.
Who do you believe is responsible for homelessness? Like, is it the person themselves or their support system or even the federal government?
I don't think, again, there's a single group that's responsible. I think it's really a question of creating the partnerships that we need. I think municipalities, provincial governments, federal governments, the private sector need to look at how we can more adequately house people in this country, not only in our larger centers, but in rural centers as well. Recently, Estevan, for example, I think last week, or it may have been early this week, I can't remember, I was talking about the difficulties they're even having finding homes for people that are actually working. So homelessness doesn't necessarily imply that you have to be unemployed.
Why do you think certain people are more susceptible to homelessness than others?
That's also a complicated question. One of the largest issues is the availability of affordable and social housing. As you indicated in your opening comments, that the price of housing has increased dramatically in Saskatchewan and for that matter, continues in across Canada. People on minimum wage, for example, find it very difficult to find adequate rental accommodation or even be able to find a home in which they can mortgage. Usually, it's accepted that you would pay in rent or a mortgage approximately one-third of your income. But people on minimum wage, for example, would pay upwards of 57% of their income, leaving very little for other basic needs such as, you know, food and shelter.
All right. So we know that we know that many homeless people suffer from addiction issues. In a review of the needle exchange program done by the provincial government, Saskatchewan handed out 3.5 million needles, compared to Alberta, who only distributed 1 million. Breaking it down further, consider Calgary against Saskatoon and Regina. In 2007, Calgary handed out 340,000 needles to their users. Handed out 1 million, and Regina was 2.3 million. What percentage of this population could be homeless?
I don't know specifically among the people who may have a substance abuse problem, either alcohol or drugs, but it's generally accepted that in any large community, there's about 4% of the population. So if you took 4% of Regina's population, we'd be looking at 5,000-6,000 people or more.
Okay. Do you think people can get a place to stay if they're intoxicated?
Well, there are definitely services, and I think we're very good at providing emergency services for people. I mean, sometimes the shelters are full, and that creates a huge problem. But there are definitely agencies, social agencies in the city, and social safety nets for people in emergency situations. But that's not as much our problem as dealing with the issue of homelessness on a long-term basis. You've talked about the concealed homeless, you've talked about the absolute homeless, and so on. What we essentially have created is a system of a revolving door where people move from one crisis shelter to another crisis shelter or short-term kinds of accommodation. One of the sayings that they have in Calgary in their homeless foundation is that we have to stop managing homelessness and we have to actually start preventing homelessness. And the only way to do that is to create social and affordable housing. Social housing where people, like you mentioned, who are addicted, have social supports in place so that they can learn how to live in a home. Affordable housing for people who don't have adequate income.
So can you tell us some of the problems that homeless people face on a daily basis?
Well, I think you just have to think of your own lives. I mean, just imagine waking up in the morning, not having anything to eat. You may or may not have a job to go to, or you may or may not be able to go to school. But if you haven't got a base from which to live your lives, a place to call home, where you can go and rest, make your lunches so you can go to work, so you can go to school. If you haven't got a place that is safe for yourself and your children, these are very huge problems. And people that don't have access to adequate homes and housing will end up being moving from one crisis to another. They can't get their children to school on time. If they can get them to school at all. They can't get to work because they haven't had a decent night's sleep. They're up all night looking for a place to stay and so on. So these kinds of problems, you know, become chronic. They become problems where people just keep, looking for help from one crisis to another. And then it becomes very difficult to live a healthy life.
In your paper, Homelessness in Regina, 2010, you stated that homeless men tend to be older, and when they get to homeless shelters, they don't stay as long, but they come more often. Why is that?
Again, there's people want housing, and they're looking for housing, but people also don't want to be controlled. Often when people are given opportunities to live in a particular place, there's a huge bureaucracy which requires them to be able to put down a damage deposit, be able to have an address. They have to provide a driver's license, and they may not have these things. And so men that tend to be sort of single and on their own don't carry ID necessarily, and it's more difficult for them to find stable housing.
How does homelessness affect the economy?
It's a huge expense, because when we're not providing affordable housing or social housing to people, then we're dealing with problems where people end up in our emergency centers, people end up in police custody. Sometimes, you know, the ambulance is being called, and these are very, very expensive services. One of the studies they did in New York, for example, where they looked at the cheapest form of intervention ranged from actually providing people with a house. The next level, of course, was shelters. Then the level after that, jails become expensive. Housing, people that end up in mental institutions are another very expensive form of housing. When we are able to house people adequately, there's a tendency for them not to rely on emergency services, not to rely on the police, not to have to rely on hospital emergency services and so on. So it affects us all as taxpayers. It just seems that it's an inadequate way of going about dealing with the problem, and a very expensive way, just only through emergency kinds of responses.
So since a lot of people using homeless shelters do have jobs or are in Saskatchewan assistance programs, and they cannot afford a place to live because they can't afford rent, how can we help lower the cost of rent and help the situation?
Well, one of the things that has been tried, and it's been fairly successful in different communities in Canada, United States, Australia, for example, a lot of places in Europe, is by when builders build new communities, for example, one of the things that builders are required to do is a percentage of the homes that are built as affordable housing units, so that we're not we're making available healthy communities to people and distributing income across communities, rather than forcing people into ghettoizing people who tend to have lower income.
Is that the same as the housing first approach in Portland?
Not quite. But housing first is the idea behind it. The philosophy behind it is that before you can help people with their addictions, before you can help people with domestic violence, before you can help people who may have a mental disorder and so on, is that in order to help them, they need a place to live. Right, so the first priority has to be housing. Right, often what will happen though is people, like for example, who have a substance abuse problem, say, "Well, I'm not going to rent to you because you have a substance abuse problem." Right, because they don't want any damage to their property. Housing first puts in social supports, counselors, social workers, and so on, to help these people stabilize. And once they have a home to go to, then they can begin the treatment process to deal help with them. With substance abuse. And the same is true for other kinds of social and psychological problems that people experience, mental disorders, women living domestic violence situations with children. Before they can be before they can find a life that's stable and healthy, they need a place to go. They need a place to live, from which to find work, from which to put their place their kids in school, continue their education, and so on. So they can't do those things without a home. And so the whole idea of Housing First is to get people adequate and appropriate housing from which they can either help themselves or receive help so that they can get back on their feet.
What is your opinion on whether or not homeless shelters should provide food for people to take with them?
Whether shelters should provide food? Well, I think food, shelter, and clothing are basic human needs, and these should be met across the board as basic human rights. I think it's absolutely imperative that in order to respect people's dignity, that we have to ensure that as Canadians that there is, to coin a phrase, that no one is left behind, that all individuals are important and all individuals have a contribution to make. And I think in order to be able to do that, folks need those basic survival needs, food, shelter, and clothing.
Okay, so in the Leader Post, there was an article published about a homeless man who went to Carmichael Outreach, and there the director phoned several branches of healthcare, each time being directed to another person. The director was then told the man didn't need hospitalization because he wasn't sick enough, yet he was too ill to be properly cared for at the shelter. He, like many others, will slip through the cracks this winter. What do you make of this predicament?
Part of the problem is that we don't have the right professionals in the right place at the right time. So, for example, one of the things we know about people that are homeless is they do a lot of walking in order to get from one place to the other because they don't have money for transportation. And because they do a lot of walking, they end up with problems with their feet and so on. People that don't have adequate nutrition end up have problems with their health and so on. So what we end up with is a referral system where we try to get people help, but most agencies have very specific criteria of who they'll help and when they'll help. What we really need is an array of services that are integrated, that are client or patient-centered, and that the needs of the individual are met versus the needs of the particular organization as to whether or not they will provide a service. We need to have a problem-solving approach rather than a whether or not you qualify for service approach.
How will today's uprising economy relate to the homelessness in Regina?
Well, it's going to get worse rather than better, because the houses that are right now that are being built are out of the reach of many people that are homeless, whether they're working or not. Many people on minimum wage and so on cannot afford the houses that are being built right now. So it's not far from the truth that people who are in the upper income levels will be able to afford the new housing, but as the economy grows, the people that are living in impoverished environments, impoverished housing, or even on the street, will tend to be worse off. I think we need to have a collective response across all levels of government and the private sector to ensure that that doesn't happen.
So earlier when we talked about the Leader Post article with the
man from Carmichael?
Yeah, the man from Carmichael who was denied kind of his own kind of hospitalization,
mm-hmm.
in a way. So you were talking about and saying that you don't believe that we have the right professionals in places like that. So mm-hmm. who would you kind of recommend?
Well, I mean, just for example, one of the things they've taken another community in Calgary that I visited where they have a homeless shelter. So we know that often people are charged with very minor crimes who are homeless. People have medical issues where they don't have people to care for them. Don't have healthcare professionals. They don't have a family doctor, for example. So one of the things that the Calgary Homeless Foundation provides is that they have those professionals right in their organization. So they have lawyers that can help give free legal advice. They have health nurses that can help identify health problems and recommend treatment and so on. So the professionals are in the organization that the homeless tend to visit, rather than have to go to a different organization to deal with their health problems or their clothing problems. It's a sort of one-stop shopping kind of approach, rather than multiple agencies that aren't necessarily well connected to one another.
Thank you, Hirsch, for your descriptive answers. We have heard about some heavy topics in this first half of the show. Now we'd like to take a bit of a break, of a music break. The song we chose was Moments by Emerson Drive. It tells the tale of a man who is homeless, falling on hard times before his life went awry.
Coming to the end of a long, long walk, when a man crawled out of a cardboard box under the East Street Bridge, followed me onto it. I went out halfway across with that homeless shadow tagging along, so I dug for some change, wouldn't need it anyway. He took it looking just a bit ashamed. He said, you know I haven't always been this way. I've had my moments, days in the sun moments. I was second to none moments when I knew I did what I thought I couldn't do. Like that plane ride coming home from the war that summer, my son was born. Memories like a coat so warm the cold wind can't get through. Looking at me now, you might not know it, but I've had my moments. Well, I stood there trying to find my nerve, wondered if a single soul on earth would care at all, miss me when I'm gone. That old man just kept hanging around, looking at me, looking down. I think he recognized that look in my eyes. Standing with him there, I felt ashamed. I said, you know I, I've had my moments, days in the sun moments. I was second to none moments when I knew I did what I thought I couldn't do. Like the day I walked away from the wine for a woman who became my wife, in love that when it was right could always see me through. Looking at me now, trash can fire tonight, that old man tells his story one more time. He says, I've had my moments, days in the sun moments. I was second to none moments when I knew I'd
Hello. For those of you who are just tuning in, we are students from Campus Regina Public enrolled in the Social Justice, and our topic today is homelessness. I'm Alex from Knoll.
I'm Claire from Sheldon.
And I'm Ashley from Chalm.
Today our guest is Hirsch Greenberg from the U of R. For those of you who are just tuning in, we've been discussing causes of homelessness and local supports. In our social justice class, we've learned the importance of addressing the root issue of problems instead of just the symptoms. This second half of the show, we will touch on this part of our issue. So people complain about needles lying around in Regina a lot. Wouldn't a safe injection site like the ones in Vancouver help solve this problem?
It would in part. It wouldn't eliminate the problem entirely, but even the needle exchange programs that exist in Saskatchewan are positive because it does offer people the opportunity to use clean needles and by distributing needles back to people in exchange for their dirty needles, we are preventing disease. So it's like, this may be a bit of an oversimplification, but it's like littering. If there are garbage cans around, people will put them in the garbage can. And if there are no garbage cans around, people will just put their garbage on the in the parks and in the street and so on and so forth. So it still doesn't prevent all people from making sure that people will use a garbage can, but it really does make a difference when they are available. Same thing is true of people with who are addicted to drugs and use needles. Given the opportunity, the vast majority of them will rather use a clean needle than a dirty one. And so it would reduce the amount of needles that are just thrown out because they have no place to deposit them.
I know there's not a large majority, but there are quite a few pregnant injection drug users. Do places like Carmichael Outreach that have the needle exchange program, do they give out to these visibly pregnant mothers?
I'm not sure about Carmichael. That may be something recently they did, but I know the other agencies that have had needle exchange programs. One of the things we have to do is we should not judge people, by our standards based on us being healthy individuals and having decent income and housing. I think we really need to be more respectful that people, that we need to understand what people are suffering rather than sort of seeing and judging them based on using a needle and being pregnant. It is a problem, and such a case actually has gone to the courts in Canada. There was an example of that in Manitoba about 10 years ago. And it was deemed that it is the decision of the mother whether or not to continue being a drug addict or abusing substances.
A campaign that the University of Regina does in the 5 days of homelessness is that they try to help raise awareness of homelessness in Regina and across Canada. Those who participate in this event must stay on the campus and have no income or food. All of the funding received goes to those regions' respective charity causes. Food is only received through direct donations. Any non-perishable food is kept for donations. They can only have a sleeping bag and a pillow with no access to showers. No cell phones or technology is allowed unless they use it to promote the event. However, throughout all of this, they still attend classes. After the 5 days are done, they write about their experiences. If you would like to read more about this experience, you can do so at www.5days.ca.
About the campaign, the 5 days of homelessness, do you personally know or have heard about anybody at the university that in your classes or any of the teachers that have been involved in it?
Well, I know some of the other professors that have been involved. I don't know the students personally, but I've made a concerted effort to, drop by during that time and contribute what I can to their efforts. I think it's an extremely good approach to raising awareness, and I think the students themselves learn from the experience. I know having dropped by a couple of times. Most of them can't wait until the 5 days are over. But they have a choice at the end of the 5 days. People that are homeless don't.
So last week, our class, and actually in the first half of this show, we talked about the housing first approach, about how certain organizations plan to decrease homelessness by giving people steady living conditions before they can address the problems. They also started something like that in Victoria. Do you think that this is a good solution to help homelessness?
Yeah, I'm a very, very strong advocate of the housing first approach, because what it begins to do, it begins to address people's needs. It begins to address some of the underlying reasons why people may be homeless: domestic violence, substance abuse, mental health, poverty, low income, and so on. If people have a home, it makes it a lot easier to begin to address their other needs, their health needs, substance abuse needs, counseling needs, getting children in school, and so on. I think it's a really important way of ensuring that people feel that there's help when they need it, and it helps them begin to build an independent life. If we are able to help people do that, and they actually get jobs or go back to school, they become contributors to our society rather than people who are relying on society just to help them. So I think by giving them a helping hand, largely through no fault of their own, and giving them a step up, I think it's a net benefit both to the individuals or the families and society as a whole. I think it's an excellent approach.
Do you think this could possibly be used in Regina?
Absolutely. Many years ago, we ran a program that it wasn't based around housing, but housing was a key component of what we did. And it was a way of ensuring that people didn't have to access the very expensive services like hospitals, police, EMS, and so on. And just by helping them stabilize their own lives and having a resource where they can go and talk with people, they began leading healthier lives. It sometimes, these things don't fix themselves overnight. These problems have occurred over a lifetime, and it could take years for people to sort of get back on their feet. But the approach is a lot less expensive than just trying to intervene during crisis situations.
What are some other approaches that could be used for decreasing this problem?
Well, I think Canadians, through our tax dollars and government, need to have a national and provincial housing policy that looks at the problem in the long term. Canada is one of the only countries in the Western world that doesn't have a national housing program. And you have to remember that housing is just not a Regina-Saskatoon problem. It's also a problem in our smaller communities. It's also a problem on reserves. And we need a policy and an approach that is a shared responsibility across jurisdictions in partnership with the private sector. And we need to ensure that the people who need houses have the assistance they need to be able to afford these houses. And once they're able to do that, then, as I said earlier, they are more likely to be able to live productive lives.
It costs approximately $1,300 to spend the night at the hospital, and about $775 in a drunk tank. All of this coming out of taxpayers' pockets, but it only costs between $32 and $110 per day for housing the homeless. Not including ambulances and other things of that nature, how much impact does this have on the economy?
The spending of these dollars? It diverts money into crisis situations. rather than in terms of long-term solutions. One of the things you mentioned earlier was taking a look at root causes. We can continue to respond to symptoms, but at some point, those become very, very expensive services. It's a lot easier. You know, there's an old saying, and a lot of people have heard it, right? It's a lot easier to teach someone to fish than to feed them on a daily basis. It's a lot easier to help people learn how to become independent, and it's a lot cheaper in the long run than to constantly have to provide services that are very expensive to people.
All right, so in Regina, there are several shelters that are only for women who have been or are abused or have children. Some we found were YWCA, Isabel Johnson Women's Center, Shelter. Gemma House and Wichahick Safe House for female youth. But what about the older women or the women who don't have children or don't face domestic abuse? What are possible shelters for them?
There are not many that I'm aware of. The YWCA is quite open to trying to help them. They do have rooms available. But again, if the woman can't afford the room, they have to turn to the welfare system to fund them. It is very... Most of the shelters are geared towards single men. They're not geared towards families. But families are huge. Families and women are large numbers of people affected by homelessness.
On Wednesday, Dr. Mark Spooner, a professor at the university, came and talked to your class about globalization. During a question period, we asked his opinion of homelessness in Regina. He answered that since Regina is hitting a boom time and that rent increases and vacancy decreases, there's less affordable housing and the cost of things increase. What do you think about Mark's opinion?
I would agree. Because we don't have a national housing plan or a provincial housing plan, I mean, these things are predictable. We know that when the economy is good and employment is high, there is a high demand for housing, which lowers the housing that is available to people that are working in lower income jobs. And the more that that happens, the less homes are available to people at the lower end of the income scale. It's my belief that housing has to be a right and not necessarily an individual responsibility exclusively. I think there are some people, and I'll emphasize the word some, that may choose for whatever reason to be homeless. But the vast, vast majority of people are homeless, want to be in a home, want to get an education, and want to be employed, and want to be able to provide a safe environment for their families and children. So I would agree with Mark, with Dr. Spooner entirely.
In the media, we usually see homeless people portrayed as elderly people dressed in ragged clothes. What do you think about this?
Well, there are for sure some, right? But there are people who have substance abuse problems that are homeless that... are not necessarily dressed in ragged clothes. There are women leaving domestic violence situations. There are people with mental health issues. There are youth. So I think one of the things that we look at or we try to understand is that if we see someone who is, you know, pushing a grocery basket and, you know, is loaded with, you know, garbage bags and so on, and they look disheveled and looks like they haven't had a bath in a long time, we'd like to, you know, we tend to think or stigmatize them as it's their fault, it's their problem. And so if they'd only sort of, you know, pull up their bootstraps, things would be different. I mean, that could be true in some instances, but it's by far the minority of people that are homeless. One of the things that was interesting, again, talking about Calgary, is they produced a book. And in this book, they had the picture of people, a person that was homeless, and then they had their life story. And I can't remember the actual number of people they had, but essentially most of the people that were homeless talked about losing their job when they were older and not having access to a new job. Women talking about being abused as children and so on. And interestingly, one of the introductions to this book was by the former premier of Alberta, Peter Lougheed, who said that we failed many of the people that are homeless as children. Let's not now fail them again as adults.
Do you think that Regina as a whole would benefit from a crisis hotline, sort of like which they had in Calgary?
Well, there is a crisis center in Regina, Saskatoon, Prince Albert, and there is regional ones like around Swift Current. And these are open, these lines are open 24 hours a day. And unfortunately, they're very busy.
Thank you, Dr. Greenberg, for answering our questions and taking time and coming out today. If anyone has any questions about homelessness or about Campus Regina Public, our class has a blog that may answer some questions. If not, feel free to contact us on there. The website is www.crp.socialjustice.wordpress.com. That's all the time we have, and we wanted to leave you with the song What It's Like by Everlast.
Okay, well, we'll get to that song in just a moment. I'm just going to close the show and thank everyone that's arrived to talk about this very important topic. The students from the social justice class from Campus Regina Public, and I'd like to thank Hirsch Greenberg for being here, and I think it's a valuable discussion, and it has to keep on happening until positive change happens. As we close this week's Human Rights Radio and CJTR Community Radio, we hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. For info on past and on upcoming shows with links to human rights actions and information, go to amnestysaskatchewan.ca. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said it's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness. And we're going to go to that song here right now, What It's Like by Everest.
Ever had to walk a mile in a shoe? Then you really. man sin. I seen a tough man cry. I seen a loser win and a sad man grin. I heard an honest man lie. I seen the good side of bad and the downside of up and everything between. I licked a silver spoon, drank from the golden cup and smoked the finest wine. Baddest dimes, beat a couple of times before I broke they heart. Out on the